It's just something of why isn't chocolate produced at origin? And some people might think that it relates to, you know, resources and access, but we built a factory. It employed 42 people in one of the poorest countries in the world. So it can be done. We are a model for that.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands which are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today we have with us Ashton Pinia, Director of Communication of Beyond Good. More flavor, more fairness, chocolate made right. Welcome, Ashton.
Hi, thank you so much for having us. We're really excited to share our story and talk more about the amazing things that make chocolate exciting.
I have a confession to make. I'm an official chocoholic. I love chocolates. I could eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Honestly, shouldn't be, but I definitely could and do often.
And especially during times right now, chocolate is such a great thing to turn to in times of comfort or in crisis when you just need that boost of energy or just something sweet to soothe all the stress that might be coming up. So chocoholics unite in this moment. It's a great time to be a lover of chocolate for sure.
Most of the chocolates that we consume come from Africa, right?
Yes, about 70% of the world's supply actually does come from Africa, most of it being from West Africa, Cote d'Ivoire, or Ghana. Those are the main countries that export cocoa. But the one issue that it sometimes happen is about 70% of the world supply is made there, but zero is actually produced. So that means all the value is captured in European countries or in America. So cocoa farmers in West Africa make on average about $1 to $1.50 a day in wages. And so that's where some of the disruption that we started the company for, to really start that conversation around farmer economics and supply chain development and access to wages and decreasing poverty.
What role did colonialism have to play in this whole scenario that you have presented to us? That the cocoa pod is grown in Africa, but the wealth is created and earned in Europe and in America.
Cocoa, it's still held to the same colonialism mechanisms that were established. I'm a person of color, and most people who work in cocoa on the farmer level are of color. And so sometimes there are issues of people of color constantly being minimized and oppressed in different industries, cocoa being one of them. The industry as a whole, chocolate is worth $105 billion, whereas cocoa as a raw material is only worth $5 billion to the industry. So it's just something to think about when we're purchasing different cocoa brands, of how they're supporting their farmers to make sure that they're earning the most responsible wages. And in the same time, that cocoa is the main ingredient. You can find in some chocolate products, cocoa isn't even the main ingredient. It's sugar or other type of ingredients that are flavored to make you taste like cocoa.
So you said $5 billion is the value of the cocoa that is used to make $105 billion worth of finished product?
Yes, that's correct. It's interesting. It's really, when I think about the dichotomy of those numbers, it's just something of why isn't chocolate produced at origin? And some people might think that it relates to, you know, resources and access, but we built a factory. It employed 42 people in one of the poorest countries in the world. So it can be done. We are a model for that. And so we changed our name from Madikas last year to Beyond Good, to really articulate the practices that we're doing to solve some of the issues affecting global chocolate. And that is producing at origin. If you can keep the beans within the same country, the value is then captured in that country. And so we're exporting finished product from Madagascar to America. And that means our farmers can earn six times more than the average cocoa farmer, or our factory workers are able to participate and collaborate in the process of economic development because they are mm-hmm. making finished product in the country where the beans are sourced from.
So this leads me to two different questions. One, what are the different types of cocoa? I believe there are different colored cocos, and what role do they play in the ultimate final product?
Yeah, so there's three different flavors of cocoa. There is Trinitario, which is kind of the most commodity. That's what most chocolate is grown. And as a reminder, cocoa does grow on a tree. So it comes from a tree that is best grown and humid around the equator. That's where it has its best growing atmosphere. And so there's Trinitario, which is commodity. And that's really just kind of most bland flavor. There's no real biodiverse elements to the growth process. It's just monocropped plain cocoa. Mm-hmm. And that's what most mm-hmm. of West Africa is. Then there's Forastero, which has more elements of flavor. And there's a more dedicated process to how the cocoa is grown. And then finally, there's Criollo. And we've tested our trees to with the USDA to find that our trees are some of the Earth's original variety of cocoa, which is Criollo. And that comes from cocoa originated in Mexico. And so trees were brought over during the different times of migration. And so we have found that our trees are the finest flavor of cocoa.
So my second question to you, how is this cocoa processed?
So cocoa is harvested. Our farmers, we work with about 100 farmers. Some are small holders, meaning they have one plot of land and they work in a collaborative, or they have a full plot, or they're large farmers. So that means they're really exporting a large quantity of cocoa. And so it's harvested, which it's usually chopped off with a machete or some type of material, all done by hand, and then brought back to the farm, cut open, and the beans are then poured out, and then they're collected. Usually, they then get turned into a fermented box, which they get rotated every 2 to 3 days. And that could change the process of flavor there. That's kind of one of the first process elements that can really shift the flavor is in the fermentation. And that's where our farmers are actually able to increase value. In some instances, farmers sell wet beans. So they're not fermenting, they're not drying them. And so they're not able to actually get as much value because they're just selling mm-hmm. wet beans. But mm-hmm. with us, we work with our farmers to make sure that they have all the techniques to dry and ferment their beans so they're actually able to increase their value of their bean. Now, just because the bean is the best flavor, there's other processes that can change the flavor of cocoa. It could be how much you ferment from 6 days to 7 days that you ferment the beans. And that's when they sit in different types of fermenting. It could be bananas, it could be in boxes, and it sits there, warms mm-hmm. up where all the flavors and smells come out. That was one of the most exciting parts for me when I went to my visit to Madagascar earlier this year, was really to smell what a cocoa farm smells like. It's really acidity and strong, but like the flavors are really coming out within the fermentation. And then they sit out in open air and dry for about a week. Then they're collected, bagged, and then shipped to our factory in Antananarivo, Madagascar, where they're then produced into a chocolate bar. And from there, they get brought into the factory, they're cleaned, they're sorted, the beans are roasted, then they're whittled, which is when the cocoa nib, which is kind of the seed of the bean, is removed from all the husks, which then the nibs get ground to create cocoa liquor, which is added with cocoa butter and